Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us on this Thanksgiving Eve. And happy Thanksgiving to each and every one of you. We will not have a show tomorrow, obviously. We're going to spend time with our families tomorrow. But then Friday, we're back, and it's going to be Family Plus for us. Sean, of course, and I will be back, part of my broadcast family. My brother, my real family, is going to be with us as well for picks in the final half hour. Frank Bodani, York Daily Record, is going to join us as well. So we have a lot going on Friday before Penn State and Michigan State. We're going to preview that game with Frank Bodani of the York Daily Record. Also, others on the show will have to talk about the big game coming up between Penn State and Michigan State. Ohio State and Michigan will kick off at noon. Then it's Penn State and Michigan State at 3:30 on Saturday. Airtime set for 2 o'clock for the Dietz and Watson tailgate show, which will be outside the Jordan Ticket Center. Tonight, Penn State basketball with Colgate at the Jordan Center. That starts at 7. Wherever you may be right now, whether you're coming home from work, whether you're going grocery shopping or coming back from the grocery store to get those last second items, obviously, for the big day tomorrow, or whether you've already started on your journey, traveling to wherever you may go for Thanksgiving, be safe. Have a great, great Thanksgiving. And thanks so much for tuning into News Radio 1070 WKOK as part of your Thanksgiving Eve. I appreciate it very much. Big day coming up tomorrow because a lot of football. The Lions and the Vikings, good game to start things off at Ford Field. Then at Arlington, it's the Redskins and the Cowboys. That's another really good game I'm looking forward to. And then you've got the Colts and the Steelers at night. We're going to talk to Neil Coulong in just a few moments about that. Final half hour, Donnie Collins from the Scranton Times-Tribune. Our thanks already to Ben Jones of StateCollege.com for joining us on the show today. He was on the previous half hour, and Ryan Snyder from Rivals.com joined us in the opening half hour. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. We go to the NBA. Oklahoma City had defeated the Lakers 9 consecutive games until last night. Waning seconds, Nick Young with the game winner.
13.9, here we go. Ingram gets it into Nance. He'll get it right back. Lou Williams over to Ingram with 8 to play. Nick Young for the lead. He's got it! The Lakers lead by 2. And Nick Young drains it.
Nick Young should get an interception also. That pass wasn't for him. He cut in front of Lou Williams and took the pass and then scored. Wow, what a development that was as the Lakers won that basket, take a 2-point lead. See, Ingram's getting ready to pass it back to Lou, and here comes Nick says, no, this is my time.
It was his time, courtesy of Sportsnet LA last night, the play-by-play call of the day. Well, maybe we'll get a call of the day on Friday that involves the Steelers and the Colts. Hopefully, we'll find out. That should be a good game, although Andrew Luck evidently is not going to play in tomorrow night's game. We bring in Neil Coulong. Neil, the Steelers have gone through a rough patch. We mentioned that the Cleveland Browns might be the elixir. What did you see on Sunday in the victory over the Browns?
I saw a lot of Cleveland is a lot worse than I thought they'd be.
Right.
That was really, really bad. I mean, we've seen a lot of Browns dumpster fire style games, in particular the week 17. We know our coach is about to be fired and we don't know what's going to happen to us, so we really don't care about this game style of play. That looked a lot like that, and to see that in week 11, it's really troubling. I thought Hugh Jackson would get more out of his team than he did. That offensive line in particular, just a horrible, horrible unit. This is my favorite stat, and I've been saying this all week. The Steelers have, in their last 11 regular season games now, 21 total sacks, and 14 of them have come against the Browns.
Love it.
I think that speaks a lot about both teams and the direction that they're going right now.
That does scream volumes. Offensively, which was really odd the week before, how much better did they play offensively this week?
I thought they played a very disciplined game. It was a fundamental game, and I think it speaks well to where they're going at this point in the season, because they really did not have the advantage of the big play. That's been a staple of games that they've played against Cleveland over the last 4 or 5 years. They've had a significant athletic advantage against that team, but the weather was such that they saw early that it wasn't going to work. And I was very impressed with the fact that Roethlisberger did not try to get the ball deep down the field again. There was a point, and I've gone over this over the years as well, when Ben has kind of an 18 for 23 start for like 130 yards, something effective but very short, chain moving, drive extending kind of passing, without those deep throws, eventually he's just going to get frustrated and he's going to bomb the ball down the field into double coverage, results be damned. I thought he did a very good job staying within the game plan, which was obviously altered and hindered for both teams with the fact that the wind was kicking as badly as it was. And they played a very effective game. They possessed the ball. They did a lot of what they needed to do. Ran into some struggles, I think, in the second half. There were a couple drives there that I don't think the execution was as crisp as it was for the remainder of the game. But they got the job done when they needed to toward the end and played very well throughout.
Short week, obviously. So what does Mike Tomlin do in a short week that is different when you have such a quick turnaround from a Sunday to a Thursday?
It accelerates everything. And one thing you have the advantage of is your advanced scouting will have been done prior to that anyway. So really, instead of taking a night to enjoy a win against Cleveland, you're immediately diving into work for Indianapolis. They've prepared for the contingency, of course. It's not catching them as a surprise. So they know from a strategic standpoint a pretty good idea of probably what they were going to do anyway. And a lot of it, what we see on Thursday games, is a matter of recovery. Which team is in better shape from an injury perspective? And it really sounds like Indianapolis is probably on the losing end of that. Leading into this game, it seems like they're going to get cut off with the fact that Andrew Luck isn't going to have enough time to get out of concussion protocol if he otherwise would have been able to. They're going to have to play the game without him.
And that would mean Scott Tolzien, who, of course, had some experience with the Green Bay Packers, but it's a totally different game when he's the quarterback versus Luck.
Yeah, especially he's making his first start for his new team. I mean, he's been in Green Bay. He might have a little bit more confidence if he's with the Packers and he's familiar with the system over at least 4 years of meetings and practice. Tolzien is it's interesting because you got to remember, too, it's a two-way street. The Steelers haven't seen him in Indianapolis either. So Indianapolis does have something of an advantage in that they have more advanced knowledge of what Tolzien is like, what they've been asking him to do. From a game planning perspective, that might be to their advantage. But I would just point to last year, the exact same scenario happened to the Steelers. Roethlisberger went down on Sunday, and they had to turn around and play on Thursday with Mike Vick, a player who hadn't played yet for the Steelers. So it's tough to prepare a quarterback with, obviously not starting-level credentials to play. If they are at home, you might be able to get something out of him just because of that. But in the Steelers' case last year, I remember talking to you about it then, they ran out of plays. The game went into overtime. Vick didn't know enough plays at the end. They were drawing stuff up in the sand before heading out there. So you have to kind of think Indianapolis is going to want to strike early in this game. Otherwise, they're just going to run out of time.
Le'Veon Bell, there are times where it looks like he's tried to do too much. Did you see a more disciplined game out of him as well when you were talking about the discipline of the offense?
It's interesting. There were a couple times I think he could have had more than he did. And there are a lot of times that he makes more than what he probably was given just because of how talented he is. More than anything, though, the offensive line really came to play. Now, this isn't exactly an earth-moving group up front for Cleveland. But Pittsburgh's offensive line looked to me like they probably would have graded out internally very well. I thought they were executing well, as in they were all doing what the play seemed to design them to do. That's something they haven't been doing the last couple of weeks. So the success that they have on the ground is definitely a confidence booster, but probably more just as a unit as opposed to Bell. I think Bell had a couple, truck-sized holes that he took advantage of, and he really didn't have a whole lot of short or negative carries. So you got to give more of it to the offensive line. I think they really raised their game in wake of some pretty valid criticism over the last few weeks.
Yeah, no question about that. They did raise their game. What do you think of the tight end play? I mean, there's no Heath Miller this year, so now you've had more than a half season to evaluate where the tight ends are. Where are they compared to what was seen in what was a standard in the NFL for over a decade?
Yeah, what we've seen last year to this year is definitely a drop-off in production. It's coming at a tough time for the Steelers right now, considering they're down so many wide receivers as well. Filling in, I think a lot of credit has to be given to Jesse James, Xavier Grimble, David Johnson for the job that they've done to this point. While you still have to be, you know, kind of frustrated with the fact that Ladarius Green is not moving like a guy that hasn't played all season long. Right. He still looks hurt to me. He doesn't look athletic at all. I'm not sure how much they'd even want to use him. I can't play him over James right now. I think James is easily the best of the group all around. And they deactivated Grimble last week, which was kind of a surprise to me. But do you really want to do that again? For me, I'm not sure I do. They're not getting Green a whole lot of snaps at this point, and Mike Tomlin has said that it's kind of by design. They don't want to push him out there too early, but it kind of gets to a point. It's like, well, what's this guy worth? You know, we're taking snaps away now, if you're the Steelers, from a player who's able-bodied and ready to play. What are you preparing for? Let's see what they do in Indianapolis. I think that's going to be a real telling sign about how they feel about the tight end's depth chart on the team. But the guys who have been out there, I think, have done a pretty good job, all things considered. And you got to think the arrow's pointed up at that position.
Have you seen progress in the secondary through 10 games?
There are problems. And I think a lot of it really is defined by inexperience. You're seeing a lot of bonehead stuff coming from Artie Burns, but at the same time, you're seeing a lot of good things coming from him. For the level of progression you expect him to have as a rookie, I think he's a bit in over his head, perhaps, but I can see why they're playing him the amount that they are. And there's some improvement. He's making some plays. You can definitely see the athleticism out there. The one I'd be more worried about, though, is Sean Davis. He was a player I thought would be a little bit more mentally prepared for this level of play than Burns has been. We've seen mistakes from Davis, you know, pretty consistently to this point in every game, whether it's a face mask penalty, whether it's a missed tackle, whether it's a blown assignment. You got to worry about him a little bit. I don't think the Steelers are particularly happy with the younger players, the way that they're playing. I think they should be a little bit better than they are. But still, and this statement rings true, and it's probably not a good one, but it's better than last year.
Right,
you
well,
see him playing a lot better overall than last year.
All right, exactly. The Steelers are 5-5. Indianapolis is 5-5. That is not an unfamiliar position for most teams in the NFL. There are only a handful of teams that have – they may not be dominant teams, but at least have dominant records. Is this good for the league that there's so many people, so many teams bunched together, or would you rather see some dominant teams?
I think if there was a team that was clearly unbeatable or clearly going to be very, very tough to beat outside of just New England, I think people would feel a little bit more optimistic about the parity that we're seeing. But literally right now I'm staring out of my computer screen a meme showing Derek Carr saying, "Leave New England to me." That's what we're replacing it with now. You know, the Johnny-come-lately team that wins a couple games in a row, All of a sudden now they're going to go challenge the Patriots, and they're not going to have a problem. There doesn't really seem to be another team in the AFC that's built right now to go into Foxborough and to take out the Patriots. And I think that's kind of downplaying the overall skill of the league. I think that the worst teams are better than perhaps they were, but the best teams aren't that dominant, elite-level kind of play. And you hate to suggest that fantasy football kind of has a factor in this in terms of perception, but you're not getting a great year out of Aaron Rodgers. You're getting a very blah year for his incredible standards from Drew Brees. He's not leading his teams to wins. Roethlisberger is not playing at the top of his game. Brady is doing very well, but he missed four games of the year, and people are still kind of, you know, bummed out about that. We're just not seeing a lot of the best kind of consistently being outstanding. I think there's a lot of up and down at the quarterback position, and that's sort of permeating everyone else's opinion of where the league is right now.
I want to bring this back to the Browns. You watch that game. They are down 141 points this year. They've only scored 184, and they've given up 325. Now, this has nothing to do with Hugh Jackson. He's been there for 1 year. But if you had to give them advice, what advice would you give them to at least get on some sort of track?
For me, what I would say is you gutted your roster entirely, and you left it so bare on talent that you need a lot more than what you're doing to get it to be a non-embarrassing product. I think you've gone, instead of the plan being take one step back, take two steps forward, you took three steps back and you're hoping to take two steps forward. You amassed a lot of draft picks, so you're really setting a long-term cycle for all of this. I'm not sure that wasn't too drastic. So for me in saying that, I do think it's interesting that they executed a deal to bring in Jamie Collins, who's an excellent player, mm-hmm. and by and large does pretty well. He kind of seemed to wear out his welcome a little bit in New England, but he could be a cornerstone player for them for many years to come. I thought he played pretty well against Pittsburgh, unlike pretty much everyone else around him. You're trying to do something to impress your veterans to keep them around, but overall, I don't know what you're trying to do with your protection schemes on offense, but that's clearly a major problem. I don't know if you have the horses to pull whatever sleigh you're asking them to, Coach. So for my money, I think you need to start there. You're cycling through quarterbacks at an astounding level, and it's not because they're good or bad. It's because your offensive line simply can't protect them. I mean, the Steelers ran the same blitz like 15 times at them and landed on probably 12 of them. I mean, it was like watching a video game. You just don't see professionals that far off of their game. It was crazy.
Neil, it's the Colts, then they'll get the Giants, then they'll be the Bills, the Bengals, Ravens, and Browns. Nothing but division games at the end. How do you like the schedule set up down the stretch for Pittsburgh?
I think it's interesting because you see a lot of teams that are going to be probably fighting for the same type of scenario with each of these passing weeks. You know, as far as Indianapolis is concerned, they've got an opportunity to remain in a race that perhaps they really shouldn't even be in, but somehow still are. It's not going to be easy to catch Houston, even if Houston just lost with Indianapolis winning this past week. It's not going to be easy for them to get really back into the hunt. So they're going to need this game on a short week at home. They absolutely have to win it. And as far as Pittsburgh is concerned, there's no reason Baltimore should be neck and neck with them. Baltimore is probably more of the pure 500 team. I think the Steelers have played underneath what they're capable of doing, but they already made that bet. So they're going to have to make up for losses to on the road to Miami by winning primetime games in short weeks at Indianapolis. You know, that's tough to ask, but they're going to need to do that. And it almost seems like they have a setup like that each of these remaining weeks of the season. And really, for me, the season for the champion starts in week 12. But this is when you start to pull away from the rest of the pack. This is when you know the most about your team and you're going to know the most about your opponent. So every area of the game is coming into play now. So for me, the Steelers have as good a position as any other team at the 500 level of making the playoffs. It's just a matter of can they do this consistently over these next six games.
Neil, always a pleasure. Appreciate the analysis so much, the conversation, and to you and yours, a happy Thanksgiving.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong joining us to preview the Steelers and the Colts tomorrow night, Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. And then the Steelers then hit a really interesting stretch coming up. I mentioned the Neil during that. And the last three games were all division games with the Bengals, the Ravens, and then the Cleveland Browns again. So the door is open for the Steelers. Now they have to take advantage of it. Great lineup tomorrow, as I mentioned. You know, Detroit's playing really well. Everyone thought when Calvin Johnson opted for Dancing with the Stars and a life beyond football, instead of playing for the Detroit Lions, that the Lions will be sunk. Far from it. They're right in the thick of the race. Vikings started great, cooled off dramatically, finally got back on track. Now you got the Vikings and the Lions tomorrow. It's a big game. Then you go to Arlington. The Redskins are playing great. The Cowboys are playing great. That's exactly the kind of matchup the NFL needs on Thanksgiving. All right. Even though I know it's a quick turnaround from Sunday, so the quality of the play may not be that great, but the game itself, I think, will put people in front of TV sets saying they can't wait to watch it. Great rivalry game, two traditional teams, both playing well. Thought the Redskins played great in the win over the Packers on Sunday night. Now, meanwhile, the third game is going to be the Colts and the Steelers. That's in prime time, but it looks like Andrew Luck's not going to be able to play in the game. All right. So that's how it stacks up. Then on Friday, college football takes over on Friday. TCU in Texas in what might be and probably is the final game for Charlie Strong in Texas. They're just letting him just twist in the wind. That's really a great way to operate. And also, it's going to be Iowa and Nebraska on Friday. Then we get to Saturday. College football playoff rankings came out last night. Alabama number one. They've got Auburn. Ohio State two. Michigan three. They play each other in Columbus. Then you got Clemson at four. They got South Carolina. You got Washington at five. Apple Cup game with Washington State. Wisconsin's got Minnesota at six. Penn State's got Michigan State ranked. Penn State ranked seventh. Wow. Final half hour, Donnie Collins and I are going to talk about the Nittany Lions from the Scranton Times-Tribune as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Final half hour of the show today on this Thanksgiving Eve. Thanks so much for allowing us to be a part of your Thanksgiving Eve. I don't care whether you're traveling home from work, you're traveling already to the destination you want, you're trying to get to for Thanksgiving, whether you're just at home preparing for the big weekend, you're finally relaxing, whatever it may be. Okay, it's just great that you've decided that we're a great entertainment option for you on this Thanksgiving Eve. Enjoy it. We won't have a show tomorrow because we're going to be with our families enjoying Thanksgiving. We're all going to take the day off. Well, I'm not quite taking the day off tomorrow. I am. Penn State's going to practice tomorrow. I will be at practice tomorrow morning. And we always do tape the pregame show with James Franklin on Thursday. We usually do it after we do the talk show at Letterman's here in State College. I'm going to tape the pregame show with him tomorrow after practice. So, hey, it's not a lot of work tomorrow. Probably all told maybe 2 hours, so I don't quite have the day off completely, but I can tell you that when I'm done, I will be done, okay? Because that'll be it. I'm going to shut it down. I'm going to relax. It's been a while since I've had a full day off. Well, I don't quite have a full day off, but, you know, to have a whole afternoon off like that. And I'm going to enjoy it. Well, I don't have everybody here because both my sons won't be here, but they'll both be here for Christmas. I'll have three of the four grandchildren here, so that's great. We'll have all four grandchildren here in 2 weeks. And then we're going to have all four grandchildren here, obviously, for Christmas. So that's what we have. All right, so yeah, I'm going to be able to, yes, for everybody asks me all the time, when are you going to rest? When are you going to say, okay, I'll get some rest tomorrow. As soon as I'm done, practice is at 10 tomorrow. Pre-game show should be done by noon. Then after that, I'm just going to sit there and I'm going to watch football and I'm going to eat. All right? Simple as that. All the outdoor decorations are up. I already have that. If I want to take some time and do some indoor decorations, I might do that. It's fine. Sports bozo of the day. I don't know which way to go on this one between the NCAA and Notre Dame. Notre Dame vacating its wins from, what, 12 and 13, something like that. Student athletic trainer was employed by Notre Dame's athletic department from 9 to 13, and he evidently helped with the academic work. Now, there's two elements that come into play here. They vacate Notre Dame's wins like they didn't exist. I mean, come on. I always find that bizarre. We're going to vacate wins. You are? Really? And It was student-on-student cheating, Notre Dame coach Brian Kelly said. The NCAA agreed on that finding. It was clearly excessive. Okay. And again, this is a student trainer. This is not one of the employed athletic trainers that did this. But what the key to me is now about the NCAA, if you're looking at this, why is the North Carolina thing taking so long? To me, that's a really good question. That's why they both fall into that category. The fact that the student trainer at Notre Dame did it, they get 2 years not vacating wins, which I think is ridiculous, and then they get a probation on top of it. Okay, but what about the North Carolina case? That's still an odd one for me. I don't really have my arms wrapped around why the NCAA is taking so long with that case. But we'll find out. All right, let's bring in Donnie Collins, Scranton Times-Tribune, Penn State, Michigan State, Saturday, Beaver Stadium. Donnie, in the previous hour, I had Ben Jones of statecollege.com in the show, and I'm going to open with the same question I asked him for you. In this seven-game winning streak, what are some of the common threads that you have noticed that have come to the front?
They've been able to push the ball down the field. I think that's the one thing that, you know, every game they've been able to make a play, a big play in the passing game down the field. And that's, you know, they're, back in September, we're all wondering what are they going to do to keep some defenses off Saquon Barkley. And that was their response. And it's worked. And it's become part of the offense. And I think, you know, whether you look back to the, you know, the Irvin Charles play against Minnesota, or some of the, you know, the Godwin catch against, you know, Blacknall as well against, against Ohio State. I think that's a common thread that you could look at and say, you know that's gotten the offensive side of it going, and the defensive side. I know they haven't been around. They weren't around, you know, for the early part of the winning streak, but it became a really dominant defense once Kabinda and Bell got back. But I think, you know, their play, the defensive line, the defensive ends have been getting some pressure, a lot of pressure actually in the last, you know, 5-6 weeks. And, you know, the big plays on offense on the field. And that's, you throw in Barkley, how great he's been. So there's been a lot of common threads every week, but I think those are some of the ones that I've noticed.
Donnie, I want to give you this combination here. Early in the season, these guys were all hurt in one form or another. Kabinda, Bell, Schwann, and Sickles. Having them out there relatively healthy, what has it meant?
Well, it's meant that, number one, they're getting the edge pass rush. And Sickles and Schwann, they've played so much better than I ever, you know, imagined they would. I mean, since the Ohio State game, Sickles has been he's been one of the best pass rushers in the Big Ten, you know, to me. So those two guys being able to rush the passer is one thing, but you can't just have two defensive ends pinning their ears back and going after the quarterback every play if you don't have Brandon Bell and Jason Kabinda. So having those two guys kind of back there to clean up the tackles. They've played great. They've you know, showed a lot of speed sideline to sideline. They've, you know, the intensity has been really great with, you know, Kabinda and Bell. So I think that you can't overstate the impact that those four guys healthy have had on the defense, because, you know, without any one of them, it's a totally different unit.
Now, let me get to the secondary, because that was pointed out as well by James Franklin during his press conference. We've talked about the rotation up front. What have you noticed in the defensive backfield rotation?
Yeah, that's been interesting. I mean, I think that, you know, you don't think of you know, defensive backs as people who you know, rotate out a lot. But you know, you very, I don't want to say rarely, because you do see Haley and John Reid on the field at the same time. But you see a lot of Oruwariye. You see a lot of Jordan Smith. You know, and it's safety. Apte's playing a ton. You know, so I mean, it does keep them fresh. It does, you know, it does give them a different look. But I think, you know, even more than keeping them fresh, I think some of these guys, especially Oruwariye, he brings you something a little different when you're coming in. I mean, he's a pretty good run defender. You know, and not that Reed's pretty good, but, you know, to be able to bring in Oruwariye in a situation where you're looking, you know, against a team maybe like Michigan State wants to run the ball, he's a guy I would expect to see play a lot. So this team, I think at every position, and it's shocking to me how fast this happened for them, but they're able to play matchups because they have so much depth now at some spots.
On the offensive line, that's the award-winning group he talked about today. Obviously, they've had to move a lot of parts, and they tried to play it smart with Connor McGovern. In other words, let's just buy one more week for him. What have you seen with them, with the shuffling they've done, and what can you say about the job Matt Limegrover has done with them?
Yeah, he got through to these guys in a way that Herb Hand couldn't. And Herb Hand is a good offensive line coach. I mean, look at Auburn. They've had a great offensive line this year.
Yeah.
So it's just I think that he has been able to kind of relate to them in a way that's been effective. And I wish I could answer it better than that. I wish I had a specific example.
Sure, right, I understand.
But it also helps. It does help that Connor McGovern. I mean, to have a kid who can come in and play well that wasn't on the team last year. And, you know, and Bates as well. I mean, Bates, you could argue outside of Gaia, is probably the MVP of the offensive line because he's been able to step in, did a great job at tackle last week in a position he's really not, you know, prototypically suited to play. But he did a great job at guard early in the year. Now he's swung out the tackle. And you add Bates and McGovern to a spot that, you know, they really could have used some help on the interior. And a lot of it's Matt Limegrover, but I think that infusing that talent has helped. And, you know, and when Mann was playing, he was a lot better too. So you know, I think everybody's playing a lot better, and that might be experience, might be, you know, adding some better players to the mix. But, you know, hey, it's hard to overlook that Matt Limegrover's a new guy in town, and he's done exactly what he said he would with a lot of these guys, and instilling toughness and, you know, and just the ability to, you know, kind of overcome any kind of obstacle.
Donnie, against Iowa, Purdue, and Rutgers, James Franklin was able to get into the game in the fourth quarter. A lot of young players. We know, you and I both know, that's invaluable. What have you seen talent-wise in those young players?
I was just thinking about this morning. That offense, when the starters are out, is an extremely physical backup offense. I mean, Tommy Stevens runs. I mean, he's a very powerful runner. Mark Allen has finished off run. Andre Robinson, we know, he's a very physical runner. I think that what we're seeing is these guys are they're getting a chance to play, but they're using it to kind of get ready. You know, and it's not just going through the motions. It's not just, hey, you know, we're playing. They're out there with a purpose. And I think on offense, you look at, you know, the guy who stood out to me is Steven. But, you know, they have a. They're deep. They're deep at some positions, and, you know, to be able to go out there and play as physically as they do at the end of a game, you know, they just ran right through Rutgers, and they did it to Iowa, also going in at the end of the game and just kind of, you know, exerting a different kind of physicality in the game. Defensively, you know, they've been able to do that as well, and now you're looking at the linebacker spot where they had to use a lot of those guys earlier in the season, and, you know, it looks a little different with Brandon Smith out there as a backup when he was starting. That's a really, really great backup linebacker. So
right.
You're starting to see depth at positions where, like, even 2 months ago, people were wondering, where's the depth on this team? Well, now they're building it, and being able to blow out some teams, you know, it's kind of helped with that.
Von Walker put out his own announcement today I believe he did it on Twitter, that he has to call it a career. He came here as one of those, quote, run-on, walk-on players and then moved his way to captain. What can you say about his career?
Yeah, I asked Franklin about that today, and he kind of, you know, he put it as well as I could put it, so I'll just tell you what he said. He basically said, you know, he's had a great impact on this team as a leader in the past, and he's going to continue to have a great impact on this team in the future as a leader. He's just one of those guys, you know, if you saw him playing, I didn't see him at high school, but I know some other people who did, who said, you know, he's just a winner, not necessarily the most athletic guy, but, you know, he's going to find a way. You know, he's kind of like a lot of those walk-on kids who've had some success over the years, McGloin, guys like that. You know, Deion Butler, who just they figure out a way to use their strengths, and I think once Walker was able to focus on special teams, didn't play as linebacker as much, didn't play running back, didn't return kicks, but to do what he did well was just, you know, fire down there on those on the kickoff and the punts and be able to make an impact, making tackles that way, and I really thought he was the best special teams player they'd had over the last 3-4 weeks. It was a shame he got hurt. But, you know, it happens. But, you know, to see the reaction that, you know, that he got from a lot of the guys on the team, mm-hmm. in the days following that, it shows you what he meant. Because, you know, here's a lot of – I mean, Brandon Bell said that was the toughest of the injuries for him to deal with. was losing Walker.
Right.
And to see a scholarship guy, a star player like Bell say that about a kid who showed up as a walk-on, it shows you what Von Walker meant. Honestly, I don't know how they get through some of what they had to go through over the last couple of years without guys like without guys like Walker. They just came in and he kind of really forgot they were walk-ons who came to the school at a time when they couldn't get scholarship players.
When you look at Brandy, you mentioned Brandy Bell in that answer. What have you thought about his return and the stabilization he's meant with his return?
Yeah, I think it helped to get him and Cabinda back at the same time. I thought Smith did a good job to go in for Cabinda. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think it's unfair to say he's not the player Cabinda is. You know, very few guys are the player Cabinda is in this league. But Bell is a guy that they're using sophomores. To kind of fill in for what he could do, and he's just so savvy. You can't replace the experience and the knowledge of the game, and the awareness that he brings to the field. And he's to lose him and Wartman and Cabinda. That's a lot of institutional knowledge that you've lost there. So to get that back, I think. To me, he's the smartest player on the defense. I mean, he's always in the right spot. He's a guy. That first drive against Rutgers the other day, when they stuffed two of the, I think it was the second drive, I don't remember, but they stuffed two plays right at the line, and you could see that Bell was kind of calling up the play, and so it's hard when you know what play is coming and you have a guy who's telling you what it is to not be able to stop that, and he's just that's the kind of player he is, and he's kind of. He's one of those guys that if you look back now when he was a freshman, he was a good player. Now he's a great player, and it's because of how much he's learned about the game.
What's your opinion of Michigan State and this game on Saturday?
I Michigan State's going to have to make some big plays in the passing game that I don't think they're going to be able to make. It's tough to play the Thanksgiving game when you have nothing to play for. I always say the game that I've seen, that I've covered in any sport that surprised me most was – the Penn State win over Wisconsin in 13. I would have picked that game to be 63-0 if I thought it was socially acceptable.
Right.
Because what does Penn State have to play for in that situation? Wisconsin's got everything to play for, and Penn State goes up there and just buries. So it could happen, but it's a tough situation to play in. And Michigan State's got a lot of talent, but it's not. They haven't gotten over the hump offensively, I think, enough to beat a Penn State team that really is, playing out of their minds right now, let's face it. And with everything on the line, this has been building up for these seniors for 5 years. They've gone through a lot of stuff that no players really would ever sign up to do. And they've, now they have an opportunity potentially to have everything on the line in a game against an opponent that's reeling. I think that's going to be a very tough situation for Michigan State.
Now, television-wise, you and I don't program television. But Big Ten Network's making a huge deal out of Michigan and Ohio State. Game day's going to be there for 5 hours on Saturday. What is your opinion of that, and what is your opinion of the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry?
It's a great rivalry. I mean, I've been covering baseball. You're part of the Yankees, Red Sox, things
right,
like that.
Sure,
it's right up there, and the passion of the fans is what really makes it. But it's also games like this where you have the occasional you're one team's number two, one team's number three. The 10 years ago, they had the 1-2, and it means everything as far as the playoffs or the BCS or whatever whatever it was back then. So. Yeah, they've had some big games in the past. I don't know, different players, different coaches. I don't know, if the past has any bearing on what's going to happen on Saturday. And I know I personally don't want to watch 5 hours worth of game day. I think that might be a little, that might be overhyped a little bit, and especially since there's a million other big games going on. I think that's what the real charm of college football is this weekend. There's so many big games going on. The Pac-12's got a lot of monster games.
Yes, they do.
Big Ten's got another big one. I'd like to see some. I don't think it's a 5-hour, pregame show rivalry, but yeah, it's a huge game, and And because it comes, I would like to know if, you know, if Ohio State Michigan was a 3:30 game, would they be doing that kind of pregame show there? And, you know, knowing that Penn State could, you know, kind of throw that on its ear. But I don't know. I know I'm not going to watch. I'll probably be traveling most of that. But yeah, I'm looking much more forward to the game.
Yep. The key is they could have sold 5 hours. That's why they did 5 hours. All right.
Oh, that's why they do everything.
Selling it's the reason they did it. Donnie, always a pleasure. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, and have a safe trip in on Saturday.
Thanks, Steve. You too.
Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. Great friend of the show. Great guy. In fact, it's always great to have him on, and all the writers that we have on the show, they've all been great. Every one of them we've had on, we've enjoyed it so much, and we can tell by the feedback we're getting, you've enjoyed it as well. Here it is, Thanksgiving Eve. I want you to take a moment. Look, if I were to sit here and list all the things I was thankful for, we'd be here between now and Sunday night. But, you know, thankful, obviously, to have this spot every single day, to work with a great guy like Sean, who's just been incredible. Sean Carey has done an incredible job, just like Kevin Herr had done an incredible job before him. So really fortunate to have the people I work with along the way. Obviously, if you sit in the seat I sit in, where you get a chance to broadcast Penn State football and Penn State basketball, you know darn well you're pretty darn lucky. Because if you were to ask how long would the line be if people would want your job, it would extend from here to New York. I know that. So, looking forward to a big weekend, but looking forward to Friday's show. Frank Podani, York Daily Record on, my brother on, looking to bury me for good in picks. He'll be on as well. We'll have a lot of fun with that on Friday. Black Friday. Look for the big deals. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.